Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston this evening. I'm joined by Joe. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. I should never say I'm doing good after a game like that. Yuck.
Yeah, I mean, your own life can be good. Like, it's been kind of weird for me this year because I know 2020 has been really awful and terrible for a lot of people, and it really kind of breaks my heart to hear about some of the stuff people close to me have gone through, and just like reading about how difficult people's lives have been, and knowing about like loved ones who got COVID and everything. But like, it's been weird for me because like me personally, and like even the Texan season, I guess in some ways, like going off of what you just said, but me personally, this has been one of the best years of my entire life, and so it's been hard to like see everything else going on out there outside my window, but my own immediate reality, like everything's been really good, except like the external reality has been the stuff way out there on the television, newspaper has been absolutely dreadful this past year. And hopefully, next year's a lot better for everybody else. And hopefully they have a really great year, as good of a year as I had this year, because I just had a lot of things that were really important, beautiful happen this year. And I hope next year everybody has the type of year that I had this year,
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I can feel that because, I mean, I got this writing job for Battle Red blog this year, and that's exciting because it's my first like writing gig, I guess. And it's been fun writing for the Houston Texans. As much as I like to low-key defend Bill O'Brien, I was happy to see him get fired, so that was a really positive move. And this is my last semester in graduate school, and I have one final project left to do, so it's suffering right now, but it'll be so good in the next couple days once I'm finished with this final project. So, like, everything surrounding the nightmare of 2020, like, for me personally, like, the womb that I'm in has been positive. Everything outside of it has been fire, but everything within it's been okay, and it's about to be a lot better once I'm done with this project.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, man. I think it's kind of like there is a difference between, like, what's going on with you individually and then what's going on outside of you individually, and also just always remembering that every second, every day is beautiful and precious and perfect. And it's kind of fun, like, hearing you talk about, like, your project coming up and this is almost over. And I think for, like, the Texans as a franchise, too, it's kind of like how it is. It's, like, the next 3 weeks are like, your final project, where once these next 3 weeks are over and the season finally comes to an end, then it's like, okay, now hopefully the good stuff kind of starts happening with, general manager hire and the head coach hire and the ability to do things like cut David Johnson and make some moves and create some salary cap space and try to find some new fringe players and kind of figure out who the head coach is going to be. And as long as it's not like Marvin Lewis, I think next year should be really, like, at least like they should be a playoff contending team again right away. But again, we still have 3 weeks to get through first, and then we still have to hope that Kyle McNair and his super task force don't botch, with something that should be pretty easy to do going forward for next year as well.
Oh, it's going to be so, I still am nervous. I'm not going to relax until I see who they hire, because like something in my brain is telling me that they're going to hire someone terrible.
Oh, I'm expecting Marvin Lewis right now. Like, I'm fully ready for Marvin Lewis to get hired here.
That or like Matt Patricia or something, or like some terrible like college coach. Like, who got fired in college?
Kevin Sumlin.
Like, coach for. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Sumlin can bring the air raid to Houston and have it not work like what Cliff is trying to do in Arizona. So for this game here, though, like back in 2017, the Texans had just traded Name Redacted for a second-round pick and pretty much like a salary cap dump swap with Cleveland, where the Browns pretty much bought a second-round pick from Houston by trading for him. The funniest thing about that summer, too, is like he was going in the year as the number one quarterback, and they like had that like Twitter video of like Name Redacted's name in flames, so like really bad guitar music being played, and he's throwing the ball like 3 yards past the line of scrimmage, and that was pretty funny. So Houston was staring down Tom Savage to be their starting quarterback that year, and so this draft class had Mitch Trubisky, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Kizer all selected in the first two rounds. The Browns are the first overall pick. They took Myles Garrett one overall. Then the Bears were picking third. They traded up second overall with San Francisco, gave a 2017 third-round pick, a 2017 fourth-round pick, and a 2018 third-round pick to move up. They selected Trubisky at that point. After that, the Niners took Solomon Thomas. Jacksonville took Fournette. Tennessee took Corey Davis. The Jets took Jamal Adams. The Chargers took Mike Williams. Carolina took Christian McCaffrey. Cincinnati took John Ross. Kansas City took Patrick Mahomes after they traded Buffalo, where they flipped first-round picks with them, traded 2017 third-round pick and 2018 first. And then New Orleans took Lattimore. Houston then traded with Cleveland by flipping a 2017 first-round pick and then giving up a 2018 first-round pick for this to occur. So this has been kind of like the going off point for both the Bears franchise by selecting Trubisky, for the Chiefs by selecting Mahomes, and by the Texans by selecting Watson. So Joe, looking back on this draft class in 2017, you know, now that we're here 4 years later, why do you think Chicago trade up to select Trubisky instead of Mahomes or Watson at that time?
I think they saw in Trubisky a extremely high ceiling in terms of talent, because he was extremely mobile. He had a big arm, and he was capable of making plays on the move, and his ability to one man offense that UNC team in his single year in college, mm-hmm. I think was just so intoxicating for the Bears franchise, because they thought all we need to do is just surround this guy with some playmakers, and in a couple of years, if we have a good coaching staff, he will turn into something special. I think it's kind of what Buffalo was thinking with Josh Allen, is that his college career wasn't great, but the talent is there, yeah. And if we can surround him with something good, he can turn into an MVP-like player. And I think this year's comparison is Zach Wilson, who I think Zach Wilson is going to be a great NFL quarterback. But who knows? I like Mitchell Trubisky in 2018, so maybe I'm not the first person to trust.
Yeah, well, but, and I think that's kind of like the bet. That's the way I looked at it, too, whenever I was watching quarterbacks that year. Because, Trubisky greatly improved from his sophomore to his junior year, and, he had that, allure and, that tantalizing idea potential without having all the negative red flags that, you know, Mahomes had with his, wild, you know, and insane style of play, on his yeah. end. And, there was, such a big ceiling, such a big growth, you know, from year to year. Physically, he had a great arm, like you mentioned, his ability to make plays on the run. The only downside there was, how well can he develop and learn NFL offense? How quickly can he do that? And then, two, just, he had some accuracy misses. But he was so good throwing the ball downfield, you kind of think that eventually that would kind of work its way out, where he'd be better at that shorter stuff. And, I can see why the Bears made the decision they made. It was, you know, absolutely 100% like a terrible decision. It was like picking up, a heroin addiction or something. And it completely dismantled, what the Bears could have been. But, I understand why they made the decision at the time when they did, though.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, if you took me back to 2017, I probably would have taken Trubisky over Mahomes, because the red flags for Mahomes were bigger than the red flags for Trubisky. So, and they both had similar, positives. So mm-hmm. you take the good with the bad with Trubisky for me. And, I mean, I still think Watson was the best, because he had tons of tape, and he was clearly a decent quarterback. But you always have to be a little bit nervous about a player like Watson, because he was surrounded by NFL talent his whole career. Mm-hmm. It's why I'm nervous about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, is that they've never had to one-man offense a team. So, I can understand the nervousness around Watson in 2017, and I can understand why they believed in Trubisky more than Mahomes. But, man, I mean, you never know how things are going to work out in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, and this is what I read about Watson in 2017. This is the first paragraph I let off, as I said. Deshaun Watson is the best quarterback entering the 2017 NFL draft right now. This is a good yet confusing thing. It's good because he was great in college, but it's confusing because it's entirely impossible. He has maxed out his potential. Traditionally, it's difficult to take someone with his unique skill set and toss him out to the murky world of NFL schemes. And immediately I was kind of in love with Watson watching his video. And then as I watched more of it, I just don't know how much better he can get, you know? And it turns out when you're already really good, you're probably, you know, if you're already a really good quarterback, it really isn't that hard to stay really good, you know. And that was kind of the thing with Watson. Yeah. He's just always been really good from the very beginning, and had the highest, you know, floor out of all the quarterbacks that were selected in this draft. And it's kind of that hard thing about, you know, whenever you're scouting anything for college stuff, you're looking at a player now and trying to project him out into the future and what he would look like in the NFL. And there's like a big, like, you know, leap of imagination that has to take for that to occur, and understand like the context that they're playing in. And so with Watson, like, I loved him. I just didn't know how much, you know, what would the difference be between, you know, him in 3 years versus him now. And he has gotten a lot better as a quarterback too. And it was, you know, Houston completely made the right decision at that time too.
Man, I mean, we dodged a bullet by having Chicago pick Trubisky instead of Watson. And to tell you the truth, like, you never know what's going to happen with these quarterbacks when they enter the NFL, because a lot of the things that people praised Watson for having in the 2017 draft, Sam Darnold came into the 2018 draft with. Mm-hmm. And Sam Darnold has absolutely not had a career like Watson has had so far. So I don't know if that's because of the Jets, but I mean, like, obviously Sam Darnold hasn't turned out as good as Watson, even though he was coming into the 2018 draft as at floor level supposed to be at least a decent quarterback. Mm-hmm. So
Darnold's been nothing like that at all either. Like, watching Darnold, it's like 5% of it is spectacular and 95% is just complete crap. And so it's like, how can you turn this 5% into, like, you know, maybe 60% and then getting 40% good play, and then, you know, having like, you know, 10 or 5% of it's like mistakes that you can live with. And I don't, who knows with what the Jets have going on there as well too. And like, I mean, even for Houston, I don't think like trading up to select Watson was the right decision. But the decision that they could have made was to not trade up and select Watson at all, stay where they were at, hope he fell further, or even be like, yeah, we'll just take him or Deshaun Kaiser and see who falls back down that point. And like,
thank God,
you know, he played for the 0-16 Browns team, played for Hugh Jackson. Who knows? I love Kaiser coming out just because of how good of a vertical thrower he was. Like that throw to Will Fuller against Virginia is like one of the five best throws of last decade, you know? And, yeah. But he just didn't have the short accuracy, the medium accuracy. Hugh Jackson never really gave him any sort of easy way to, like, any sort of easy offense. So everything was really difficult for him. I think he also had some kind of weird, like, difference between what reality is and what he thought of himself at the same time too, and just seems kind of like a weird guy, but like the way he still talked about himself a year later, where he feels like he's an MVP caliber quarterback even though he can't even like hold like a practice squad job. And so who knows what would happen there if Houston was some sort of like offensive structure better than what Hugh Jackson offered for him. But you know, Houston made the complete, like, Rick Smith like hit like a grand slam like four times at once by trading up and selecting Watson, and was 100% was the correct decision to make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't imagine where we'd be if we selected Kaiser. I feel like we'd be, Bill O'Brien might still have his job, and we might be still looking at like a name redacted offense if Kaiser was here. Even though I don't hate Kaiser that much. And you almost wonder if a quarterback like him went to like a team loaded on talent, like a Chargers, mm-hmm. or a Patriots or something, and you know, just wonder what would have happened with his career if he would have been plugged into an offense that was ready for his skill set instead of going into like a nightmare scenario in Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel the same way too. It's like, I know Kaiser's bad, like, by me really liking Kaiser, I was wrong by saying that, but I still like, I always have that, you know, kind of like idea in my head, like, what if he went somewhere that was not the worst team in one of the worst teams in the history of football? What if he went somewhere that wasn't that, didn't play for Hugh Jackson, he was the worst head coach in the history of football? How would his career be differently? But who knows? You know, like, he hasn't been able to pick up any sort of pieces from there at all. And so, I don't know. I just think, there, you know, looking back on his career right now, where he's at, I just think he's kind of a weird guy and doesn't understand it, like, mentally well enough at all, in some ways, to be able to pick it up and be able to, you toil through being a backup and do the Marcus Mariota thing or the Nick Foles thing, or you know, whoever else that starts for a backup for a little bit and eventually becomes a starter again.
Which I always liked, like, in 2018 and in early 2019, I fell in love with Marcus Mariota for some reason. I don't know why. I think it's just like, I have like a thing, and it's the same thing with Trubisky. Like, I have like a thing for quarterbacks that have the speed to make plays and to outrun players and can throw deep down the field on the run. Like, there's just something about that. It's why I like Zach Wilson too. Just like something about those kinds of quarterbacks, like, I just fall in love with. Mm-hmm. And I would always think, like, man, if Tennessee would have constructed an offense around Mariota's skill set or something, or looked at his 2014 tape and applied it to 2019, he might be great. And I was thinking the same thing about Trubisky for this past year. Like, if they just would have done what they did in 2017 and early 2018 and let him roll out more, which is what they did this game, and he had a great game, then he might be actually a good quarterback. But now you're starting to get into the territory of now you're like forcing an offensive coordinator, an NFL coach, to limit their like repertoire because of the quarterback. And if you wanted actually a good quarterback, Deshaun Watson and Mahomes are perfect examples. You can plug them into any like scheme and they will flourish. You shouldn't have to limit your scheme to one style, because your quarterback can't excel in any other way.
Yeah, and
So
that
that's
makes
why I,
sense.
yeah. And
One.
that's kind of like the therapy I tell myself when I realize Trubisky sucks.
Yeah. Well, and like it's like whenever you add that many variables, you possibly too. I think with Mariota, I think the problem with him is that he didn't have the arm, the throw down field, never had a good feel for it at all. Ken Whisenhunt tried to develop an
No.
offense around him. They went like 2-14 his rookie year, and then in came like, in came Malarkey and everything after that, and they went with the meth mouth and like, Marcus Mariota won a playoff game. He threw the self psych touchdown and but yeah, like they didn't do a great job developing offense for him. But he also had so many injury problems too as well. I think there was also like talking to Tynes Filbrim on their season preview, talking to him about Mariota. He was saying like there was a lot of stuff where Mariota wasn't listening to the coaching staff probably. Like, there was different reports about how like he wasn't listening to the coaching staff about like how to maintain his body. Like he wanted to play it this way, they wanted him at this way. Like he never really kind of like him and Tennessee just never really got along at all. And so it'll be interesting to see if they get anything out of him going forward. And like I will say this too, like since we're on the topic. Like, I don't buy this idea that Watson is better than Mahomes. He isn't. Mahomes is like, the best quarterback in the league by far. He's also in like playing for the best offensive scheme with the best set of skill players in the NFL. And Watson hasn't had that same level of talent around him. But like, I do think like Watson could win a championship in Kansas City, but could have won a championship in Kansas City, but he just wouldn't have the same production that Mahomes currently has. And I don't think it's really all that close at all. And I do think the thing about Mahomes too is that like his talent is able to override so much stuff in that offense that even like when the things aren't easy there, he's able to just create things that'll come out of nothing so many times. And I do think Kansas City with Andy Reid, they've done such a great job too of like maximizing his strength and his skill set and then being able to just like get him like a little less wild, It's like they've found the perfect balance between like letting him be himself and then taming him and not letting him like turn around like three different times in the backfield, take all these, you make the Josh Allen sort of plays that he'd make at Texas Tech here and there that just like wasn't quarterback play at all. And so they've done a really great job like coaching him and finding that balance between the two in Kansas City.
Yeah, and that's a really hard thing to do. I mean, like, it's already like almost an impossible task to find like a legitimate franchise quarterback for your team. And then it's another impossible task to construct a perfect offense around them. So it's the best of both worlds for Kansas City right now. And it's why they're going to be one of the greatest teams for at least the next 5 years, as long as Mahomes is there, really.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it otherwise. Like, they don't even have an interior offensive line right now. Like, they can't run the ball
No,
on like second and one right now.
yeah,
And
and it doesn't matter.
it
Nobody's
doesn't matter
talking
at
about
all.
it because Mahomes is just a magician and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter one bit. And then it's like their defense has had the same problems the last 3 years, but it doesn't matter because they have a great pass defense, and that's the only thing that matters. It's like throwing the ball and stopping the pass are the only two things that matter in the NFL. And like you can win games with the other stuff, but there's just so many different gears that have to work together to make that happen. And you have to have like the right opponents and the right schedule for for that to maximize itself. Kind of like what Houston had in 18 with their awful pass defense and all-time great run defense, but they don't have that sort of like 10-game win streak if they don't play Colt McCoy in Washington and Case Keenum in Denver and those sort of quarterbacks too.
Sometimes things work out, and like I think Miami had the best possible defense for Mahomes yesterday,
Play
and
man
they still
coverage
couldn't
and
beat him.
blitz. Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't know if you can do much better than that against Mahomes, and it still wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, if you can play man coverage like Miami can and be able to send five and six and still be able to play man behind it, like you can have like a theoretical shot, but like holding them to 28 points is, pretty incredible task that they were able to accomplish yesterday. And like that's what you're hoping for the maximum. It's like if we hold a 28, maybe we have a shot at it. and they couldn't score enough points there otherwise. But so here we are since that selection in 2017, and the Bears have won playoff run in 2018 where they had an all-time great defense that blew it because of the double doink game against Philadelphia. The Texans are 1-2 in the postseason with Watson with two playoff runs sandwiched between two terrible decimating seasons. So Houston was bad in 17 when Watson got hurt. They went to the playoffs in 18 and 19. Of course, losing to Kansas City last year, losing to Indy in 18. And then now they're in the middle of another terrible decimating season. So in this game, Trubisky, in their first matchup head-to-head, Trubisky was 24-33, 267 yards, three touchdowns, zero interceptions, was sacked three times, had four carries for 23 yards. Deshaun Watson was 21-30 for 219 yards, had one touchdown, zero interceptions, was sacked six times, had seven carries for 38 yards. So, Joe, why did Trubisky have such a nice and comfortable and really kind of like great game? Like, this is one of the best games he's played in his career. Why was he able to have such a nice day on Sunday?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, like watching his highlights, I kind of fell in love with him again. It reminded me of his 2019 season when like he was awful. He was so bad last year. And then he had that game against Dallas where both teams were 6-6 and he had an awesome game and ran for a touchdown. And I fell in love with him so hard that I went on Madden and I traded my Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger on my Steelers team for Trubisky. I literally did that. But like the only thing I could think of from watching the condensed game was how many times he rolled out to left or right and he had a wide open receiver like 6 or 7 yards right in front of him running in stride with him. So the rollout like dink and dunk offense was something that the Texans defense had no idea how to stop for the entire first half, because it was literally almost every play on the condensed game on offense. Trubisky was either standing in the pocket and immediately throwing on a slant route to Allen Robinson or Jimmy Graham, or he was rolling to the right and his tight end was right in front of him, wide open. So there was a lot of offensive scheming that was getting linebackers and safeties caught up on other receivers and getting these rollout passes open, or tight ends faking a block and then rolling out to accept a dink-a-dunk pass. So they didn't really ask Trubisky to do that much. He only really had one exceptional play, which is when he like threw downfield in the it was either at the very end of the second half or the very beginning of the third quarter, where he like squeezed in a ball to Allen Robinson like 15 yards downfield. But everything else was just 6 to 7 yard easy completions that the Texans defense couldn't stop.
I mean, everything was so easy this game. Like, whenever that question comes up, like, could you complete a past NFL game? Be like, yeah, I could. Just pull up Mr. Trubisky's tape from this game. This is one of the easiest offensive performances like I've ever seen. Like, you mentioned all the rollouts they had. And then that he had those two throws to Allen Robinson where it's like Robinson's out wide and he has Keon Crossan covering him. And you're like, oh, okay, this is pretty easy. And like, Keon Crossan is like opening his hips immediately, has his back turned, doesn't stand on top of the route, is like grabbing, and those were two easy catches. One of the other things I saw a lot of was that play action fake out of the shotgun where they have Allen Robinson in the slot and it's him against Eric Murray. And Eric Murray's like playing 8 yards off of him with outside leverage. And like,
you'll take that any day.
Yeah, over and over. And like, they hit that route off the top of my head three times for like, 96 yards, it seems like. And they just kept running a play action fake, which drew Zach Cunningham. And he's supposed to play like the hook zone underneath it to stop the slant. But he gets drawn by the play action fake. And it's just wide open in there every single time. They also had that touchdown throw where they went 1-by-4, where they had diamond formation on the right hand side with four wide receivers. And they have Jimmy Graham on the other side against Eric Murray. Now, I think Eric Murray's 6 foot. I think Jimmy Graham's 6'6". I think Jimmy Graham outweighs him by 60 pounds. That was just like, I mean, it was one of the easiest box outs I've ever seen for a touchdown, too. And then they had the 80-yard touchdown run, which is just like outside zone left, where Zach Cunningham goes under trying to make a tackle for 2 yards instead of make a tackle for 5 yards. Justin Reed doesn't even like attempt to make a tackle. He just runs with his head down low. He didn't want to play football yesterday either. And really, like, the only thing that made it difficult at all for Chicago was, like, Weaver called, like, in the occasional, like, cornerback blitz that worked out well. Like, A.J. Moore had good blitz, Eric Murray had good blitz, and that was it. Other than that, it was just really, everything was just super easy for Chicago. Jim Nagy completely outcoached Anthony Weaver. And again, like, this is a bad Chicago offense, a bad Chicago offensive line, and still going up, like, this bad offense and this bad defense. The Texans are obviously like, a much like one of the worst defenses in football. And it was so bad that, Trubisky was able to have one of the best games of his career on like an offense that's been hurt by injuries and doesn't even have has had so many problems throughout this season too.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a defense that is so bad that Trubisky can outplay Watson in a full game, like that's telling you a lot about. Yeah, it's that's a, and I mean, like, talk about like regretting the extension for Cunningham. I can't tell you how many times he like misplayed that run game, and he caused a massive run to occur because he gets faked out and then lets the running back just coast on by him. And I mean, David Montgomery, I like David Montgomery coming out of college, but he's had a rough couple of years in Chicago because of how bad their offensive line and play calling has been. And he's been like a man on a mission the past couple of weeks, and he was just able to walk all over our defense, which, I mean, it was bad.
Yeah. Well, another thing, funny thing about that touchdown too, it's like Tyrell Adams has, you know, the B gap, and he runs to it immediately, which increases the width of the hole. Instead of like watching the back and like flowing to it suddenly, he just runs over there as fast as he can. And now Cunningham is like, okay, if I don't make this play, it's him against three, he has no chance. And then their entire secondary is playing man coverage. And like Vern Hargreaves is running with his back to the ball 20 yards before he realizes it's a run play and he's being blocked by Allen Robinson. And after that, like, it was completely done. And that was pretty funny too. So why do you think Watson had such a difficult game yesterday after playing well against Indianapolis, playing well, you know, against Jacksonville, playing well against New England, having some really in Detroit, and having some really great performances still this year?
I think most of it was their defensive line completely dominated our offensive line, and he had little to no time to throw to his like completely depleted receiving core. I mean, Cooks, Fuller, and Cobb were all out, so you're missing your top three receivers, and the offensive play calling was obviously not firing downfield much at all because of fear of Eddie Jackson and Kyle Fuller and Jalen Johnson, who are all having great seasons. So you're not firing downfield much at all, which is Watson's strong suit. Your offensive line is having probably its worst game of the season, which isn't helping either. And then when you're scrambling, you have players like Khalil Mack, who is, I guess, faster than I gave him credit for.
It's the goatee.
Able to catch up to Watson. Yeah. it's a perfect storm for Watson to have a bad game. And I was expecting a similar game to Indianapolis because Chicago's defense was having a rough outing there for the past few weeks. I thought they had kind of dropped the ball, and the offensive line for the Texans was going to do its job and give Watson time to dice him up. But without any of your starting receivers and your offensive line playing as bad as it was, it honestly didn't matter if Eddie Jackson, Kyle Fuller, or Jalen Johnson were playing well, because rarely did Deshaun Watson have time to actually throw to his receivers downfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and they also, like, I'm very happy Tim Kelly is throwing these five wide receiver sets still, but, like, their five wide receiver sets are Steven Mitchell, all the way, like, the smallest point, the smallest font possible, Chad, all completely, nothing capitalized at all. In type one font, Chad Hansen, Jordan Akins, Darren Fells, Duke Johnson. Like, those are their wide receivers, and Kiki Cutie. Like, that's their five wide receiver set. And like, there's nothing vertical at all. I think Watson attempted one pass over 20 yards. Like, he overthrew, yeah, I think, Steven Mitchell by like, you know, 5 or 6 yards or whatever. Like, Chicago just rushed four. They didn't blitz very much at all. Like you mentioned, they got some pressure their front four. And then Houston just run like juke routes and whip routes and slants and quick digs and, like, against a good secondary that was able to play man coverage, and just stuff wasn't open for Watson. And then it's like he has 2 seconds, nothing's open, and the pocket's collapsing around him. He's able to squirt out there enough times. But, yeah, I think that was really kind of it. Like, they don't have receivers that can break man coverage. And, like, unlike the Colts just play zone. And when against zone, like, you can stretch it out horizontally, find holes in the zone. And like, they did a great job against the Colts by doing that. Chad Hansen's not going to beat, you know, Kendall Fuller in man coverage, or Kyle Fuller in man coverage, and you saw that a lot yesterday too. Like, Tayshaun Gibson was able to play really good man coverage against Houston tight ends. Like, those are like the problems that they had, you know, pass protection wise. And it's like they don't have a run game either. They're 32nd DVOA. Their offensive line cannot block the run at all. This is the worst, I think, individual pass protection game they've had. You know, they still can't pick up simple stunts at all either. And so whenever you play these five wide receiver sets like Houston did, as often they did, like whenever you go up against a front that Chicago has and you can't pass protect against four, and you're losing individual matchups like you are, which, you know, is a problem with Laramie Tunsil getting beat, you know, three or four times yesterday, with Brent Qualley out there getting beat, you know, with Zach Fulton getting beat, with Tyus Howard trying to block, you know, Khalil Mack. And, like, Howard's done well against some of the best pass rushers in football this year, but he had a really tough game against Mack, who's able to meet his strength with his own and really kind of overwhelm him at the point of attack a lot of the times yesterday. And it just became, like, you know, a huge giant ball of just, like, you know, suck. And I felt really bad for Watson yesterday because it did feel like Watson was the only person out there actually trying to play and win, whereas it felt like, you know, maybe 40 other guys on the roster already had their mind elsewhere and were thinking about, you know, getting out of here and going into the offseason, you know, and lifting weights again, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Max Sharping got benched, so I guess the door is open and shut on him. I think his times as a starting guard might be over now, because that was a pretty awful showing. Mm-hmm. So much to get actually benched.
I think he only played one series.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's done, which is disappointing. I guess it's not something that I should have been surprised by, but.
We can talk about Sharping now if you'd like to. And, like, Sharping's been unplayable this year. Like, he doesn't know the playbook. He's been bad at every aspect of offensive line play. He didn't get stronger this offseason. And I joked around that Nick Martin took all the weights from the weight room, and that's why Max Sharping wasn't able to get strong to play guard. But, like, this wasn't a guy who had any sort of pass set that would translate to the NFL from Northern Illinois. So that's why they moved him to guard. He was a really good pass protector there. Blocking, like, with Laramie Tunsil in the run game, he was able to, like, Tunsil was good enough where he was able to overcome Sharping's weaknesses. Tunsil hasn't been the same level of run blocker this year that he was last year. And, like, again, like, if you don't know the playbook, if you don't know who to block, you can't play. And, like, Sharping's been all those things. Like, is his career over in Houston? I won't say that entirely. I think if he gets strong enough and actually plays like some sort of competent offensive line coach and learns the playbook, I can still see him being, you know, a competent player again. But yeah, like, he's a much worse player this year than he was last year. Where last year he was better than Howard was, and he was, like, you know, a good enough guard, and there was, like, some potential there for the future. But this year he's been absolute, you know, disaster week in, week out, and it's been, you know, one of a thousand things that have been very depressing about this season from a Go Houston Texans standpoint.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, like, his rookie year, Max Sharping clearly had some potential. So it was just this season has been such a mess for him. And I couldn't have put it any better than you did. So, like you said, I don't know. I hope it's not the end of his career in Houston. But, I mean, having a full season like this where you were so terrible, like, and especially with a new coaching staff coming in, they're probably going to be more inclined to see if they can pick someone up in free agency and make it an open competition for the job than, you know, betting on you improving.
And it
could really be a case where they might trade him, like, at the second the season's over, in order to, like, salvage whatever value he has left for some desperate team.
I don't know. I don't think they would trade him just because of what he showed in, like, his rookie year enough. But I do think for sure, like, him on the interior, like, there's not going to be any sort of situation where they're like, yeah, he's our guy at left guard at all. I think if he might get traded, I would think they would look around Nick Martin just because he's acceptable, and maybe a desperate enough team like Cincinnati, who has played, well, I guess their center this year has been that bad. He got hurt. But they couldn't play Billy Miller there. But, like, I don't know, a team that's desperate for, like, any sort of help at the center position, maybe they'll bite and be like, yeah, we could take $9 million and have them block an outside zone scheme. Kind of like what happened to Tennessee with Ben Jones. Or I don't think Zach Fulton makes it to next year with Houston all either. So, but, yeah, both guard spots and even the center spot, you can get more play out of it for at a cheaper price. Or the same amount of play at a cheaper price there too. But I think everybody in the interior is – like, who knows what's going to happen with either three of those players next year?
Yeah, really. Yeah, talk about Nick Martin having a rough couple games here. So that's been a disappointment. This was really just like the Denver game of last year, where, like, everything went awful. And in addition to that, like, Watson got, like, the nuts punched out of him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like the definition of, like, this. That was like the embodiment of this game.
Yeah, last year was
that moment.
Last year was the Kareem Jackson, you know, screw your draft picks sort of game where he completely destroyed Houston like single-handedly and then sat out the last two games of the year so Houston can get a comp pick for him as well too, which is kind of, which is fun to see. So our first question here is from at Coach Dent, and he asks, I understand that stars never come out of games, but when the hell is Watson throwing the ball with 10 seconds left on the clock down by 29, sharping whiffs and damn near gets Watson's killed? Why? So this kind of goes in line with what you said about, you know, Watson, you know, getting hit in the nuts. You know, he was like, he was hit a lot. He was hit 11 times yesterday. He was sacked 6 times. And like, whenever they were down 36-7, you're kind of at a point where like, you're in the fourth quarter. It's like, why are we doing this at all anymore? Just put AJ McCarron out there. Like, I understand he's not going to ask it, pull, but as a head coach, you know, like, there's nothing to play for really at this point. And especially considering how good Chicago's pass rush was, it just seems like, you know, malpractice. Like, it seems like Romeo Crennel and Tim Kelly should be in jail for leaving Watson out there, for playing in the environment they played in. And really, like, I have no idea why he was out there. I don't think they got anything meaningful out of the entirety of the fourth quarter of this game. This game was over since halftime, and so I don't know. I don't know what their decision was aside from, like, Watson wanted to play, and they'll do whatever Watson says, I guess.
That's pretty much all I can think of, because I have no idea why they did it, because it was just asking for something bad to happen. It must have been the same thought process for why the Chargers left Justin Herbert in when they were down by 45 points in the fourth quarter or whatever, and they were just letting him get murdered out there. Is that maybe it's just playing time? It's probably just they want to go out there and they want to suffer with a team.
Yeah.
And the coaches didn't want to say no to that. That's the only thing I can think of, that Watson wanted to feel the sacrifice in real time.
That makes sense. So was there anything Houston's better than Chicago at in this game? And can you think of any bright point of this game from a Go Texans perspective?
Yeah, you know what? Chad Henson, mini Chad Henson, he had another okay showing. I don't know if you can call that positive, but I mean, he doesn't look, this game coupled with the Indianapolis game, I think you can say that he at least has a future as at least a backup wide receiver. He showed some talent, and he obviously has some sort of connection with Watson and is good at getting open. Cutie pretty much had like a perfect cutie game where he made a few plays. He showed some awareness with the scramble drill and got open for that one touchdown. Mm-hmm. But then to erase that positive, he muffed a punt. And that's pretty much almost been every game for him. Something positive followed by something negative.
The ghost of DeAndre Carter lives on, who is playing for the Chicago Bears right now, by the way.
And he is?
Yeah,
he
so is? He definitely had some voodoo on the other sideline. Yeah.
He definitely did. He probably had some like voodoo doll of cutie, and he was poking at it with a football, and eventually it fell out of his hands.
Yeah.
But we still didn't see. I mean, what is it? Cahale Waring was only on for like 3 snaps or something, and we still haven't seen any Coulter.
Yeah, 15. He played 15 yesterday. I don't know where these 15 came from. These are offensive snaps. I don't know where these 15 came from. I think I saw him out there once, and he was in the slot, and like, all right, here it is. And then the pressure was too bad, and then they took him out. They put Darren Fells in there again. Like, I got nothing left at all.
Well, one day we'll see him and Coulter on the field doing something, or John Reed doing something. I think Blacklock played most of this game, and I don't know. Well, I didn't see much of Greenard.
Yeah, I didn't. I saw Greenard miss a tackle really badly, and then try start a fight after he missed a tackle by covering the flag. I didn't see Blacklock at all. But he was out there, and like, I haven't really seen anything from Blacklock. And like, you know, going back and watching like all the film and everything, like, the only good thing I'd say about him is like, his hands are okay this year, but he's not being used how he was used at TCU at all. And like, he had a very like weird sort of skill set at TCU, and like, Anthony Weaver hasn't used him in that way in Houston. And so like, they're trying to turn him into some other sort of like all around defensive lineman, and it's not there at all this year, and it's going to take a little bit longer, just because, again, they weren't using him like how he had success at TCU. And so I don't know, like, that pick looks worse and worse all the time, but who knows? It's only been 1 year. And again, like, he was kind of a weird player to begin with how he played at TCU, where it's like all pad level, all hands, and a lot of stunts. And again, just like beating guys, just like being a one gap guy who's able just to like split double teams by playing like 6 inches off the ground. And in Houston, they're not using him like that at all, you know?
Yeah, I mean that sounds like quintessential Texans. Get a player that has weird talent and don't use him with his weird talents and make him look like a bust.
That makes sense. And it's like, I don't know what they're gonna do with him going forward. I don't know if they can teach him to how to be something a little bit better or whatever, but it's like where the way they're using him right now just doesn't match his skill set at all.
No, and it's and I do have some excitement about Ross Blacklock. Or not Blacklock, I mean Jonathan Greenard. I've kind of lost hope in Blacklock becoming anything special. So if he turns into anything good next year, that'll be a surprise for me. But I don't know, there's just something about Greenard that I do think he might turn into something okay in the future. But as of right now, yeah, he's bad. Was John Reed on at all? I don't think so
No,
either. John
he
Reed
didn't. No, he
didn't.
didn't make. I guess he has a neck injury. He didn't make the flight at all,
Oh, okay.
at all this week. So he wasn't there. And like he played the first half against Kansas City because Lonnie got benched for talking online while saying he's not talking online at all. And we haven't seen Reed at all since then. Like I don't know what to make of Reed. I don't really have. I really don't know what to make of Coulter at all. Like I think Reed has like a better shot of like being like a competent fourth cornerback than Coulter being any sort of like NFL offense or whatever. But yeah, I mean, like, I would
Yeah.
just like to see something, from him out there and see a target and that sort of thing as well too. So our next question from, and like also like, I think that the QB catch is probably the only good thing at all from this game. Defensively, there's nothing. Offensively, there really wasn't anything at all. Like, I'm glad Tim Kelly's still using spread sets, but whenever your wide receivers are who they have, there really isn't a whole lot there at all you can do much with. Duke Johnson had like three good runs and he had that really great screen catch. He's a much better player than David Johnson, and like hopefully he sticks around next year and they cut David Johnson. They get like a between the tackles back to complement Duke, and he's able to be like a good like 1B sort of player instead of being like the entirety of Houston's rushing offense like it is right now too. So our next question is from at Coach Den. He asked, perhaps the most pathetic lack of effort in Texans history. The whole offensive line had zero effort across the board. Was anyone getting into them on the sidelines? Does our rich center rally that group, or does he continue to fraud this foolish regime? Has Whitney Mercilus just decided not to play?
Man, yeah, I think Whitney Mercilus has decided not to play. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I have no idea what's going on with the offensive line besides the tackles. The tackles are the only one that seem to be have any sort of consistent effort. It's like what Matt said earlier is that the entire interior offensive line can be completely replaced because of how much money we're giving them and how poorly they're playing. So I don't know what's going on there. No, I mean, I think you have to give the Bears defensive line some credit. Like Akeem Hicks is one heck of a player, and that Bilal Nichols is might be his name or Nicholson or something.
Yeah, Bilal Nichols.
He's a
Urban's
good
pretty good
player.
too. Keith Urban's pretty good.
So I think you have to give him some credit is that I think those three players are far better than any of our interior offensive linemen. So you're asking a lot out of them to try and block a fully healthy Bears defensive line that is just cycling in better talent as the game goes on. Like that's kind of how the Bears, that's how they won so many games in 2018, is that they had so much depth at the defensive line that they never got tired. So I mean, it was a 2018 like Bears game.
Yeah, and I think they also forced
And the
30,
Texans.
I think they forced 31 turnovers in 2018. Like this week they had the red zone stop on 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 after Akins dropped that touchdown. They had the safety, and then Khalil Mack was able to strip Duke Johnson the outside zone play where Tyce Howard couldn't block him at all. And like that's what made the Bears so great in 18 too, is that they just forced 31 turnovers. And then they had I think they had like 25 interceptions that year. Like it was absurd how many turnovers they had that season too. Yeah, so the next question is from at Chilcuts Deep. Before today's game, Texans mouthpieces made sure to point out that all the losses were against championship slash deep playoff contending teams. What will be their public explanation of this loss today?
It'll probably be injuries. Like you can't expect Deshaun Watson to beat a Chicago defense with Stephen Mitchell and Chad Henson as his number one and number two receivers, or Keke Coutee as your number one receiver. And that'll probably be the excuse that they make, even though it was like a whole team effort in this loss. So that'll be the excuse they make, is that the Chicago defense came ready to play, and you can't expect the practice squad players to ball out against them.
Yeah, I think that's how they'll rationalize this too. And like, yeah, I think it's a good way to rationalize it as well if you're going to do that. Next question is from at Smith Grandma, and he asked, "Man, that tackle by Crossan was great, wasn't it? What's the record for most head coaches far in a single season, and can we break it?"
Yeah, like wasn't there like a interim coach that got fired in like the 90s or something?
I have no idea. I've never heard that before.
Maybe I'm thinking of some college team or something. But yeah, maybe I don't know. I'm probably just saying some nonsense. But man, I would like to hit three this year. Let's get Romeo Crennel out of here. Let's promote Tim Kelly to the head coaching job. Let him play the last two games, and then the last game, let's just like blindside him with another firing and make Deshaun Watson the head coach and starting quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know. I can never think of one at all. But I mean, I don't know. Romeo's gonna be here for the next 3 weeks. I don't think you really get anything at all out of firing him. But like, he needs to be better about like pulling Watson. They find themselves in a situation like that, because really, like, from now on, it's just don't get hurt and let's hang out for three more weeks and try. I don't know. Try to upset the Colts and hope the Colts don't. You can kind of screw up the Colts' chance of making the playoffs or winning the AFC South by beating them. It's really kind of the only thing to hope for at all, but. Yeah, Romeo needs to do a better job of pulling Watson if they're in a spot like that than what they did. I did like the Crossan, though, pass breakup in the corner of the end zone after, like, I think he gave up, like, six receptions or whatever. But he had that one in the fourth quarter in the corner of the end zone, and he really made sure everybody saw it. And I don't know if you know about this player, Joe, but the Texans drafted a cornerback in the second round. I think in 2010 or 2011, his name is Brandon Harris from Miami. Just a terrible cornerback, but every single time he make a play, he wave his arms, you know, really like jubilantly making the incomplete pass sign, and he would do it like he would do it, and then all of a sudden there'd be a flag behind him. So he would have these like really bad defensive pass interference penalties, and he's like waving his arms, celebrating. And then you turn around, it's like, yeah, that's still a 27-yard game because you grabbed him the entire time. And so Crossan's no fly zone celebration. And a 36-7 loss really made me think of Brandon Harris and those great times we had last decade or 10 years ago.
Oh, man, I missed the Brandon Harris times. Oh, man.
You didn't really miss anything.
Maybe
at all.
Lonnie Johnson will learn.
It wasn't very much fun. Maybe Lonnie has the same sort of thing, too.
He's just like the modern equivalent of Brandon Harris. Instead of acting out on the field, he just needs to tweet angrily more.
Yes. Yeah, he needs to tweet more. He needs to Justin Reed needs to tweet more. I'm glad that him and Rivers McCown were able to make nice on the internet again. Eric Murray has that in him too. Like, he made like that one run stop against Indy where he like flexed his bicep afterwards, and then he just got bludgeoned the rest of the game after that. Had another awful game this week, and like, I still can't get over the fact that, like, you know, as dumb as everything was this offseason, but the fact that Bill O'Brien had an awful defense, just a terrible defense last year, and was like, and only added Eric Murray as their major free agent acquisition. It was like, yeah, we're just an Eric Murray away from being good. Eric Murray signed an $18 million contract. They cut Tayshaun Gibson. They're paying like $3 million of Tayshaun Gibson's salary and dead money this year for him to play and be pretty good against the Bears. Like, he's good in Chicago this year. And so they're paying like, I guess, $11 million to get some of the worst safety play in football. And now he's like their slot cornerback, and he's absolutely awful at it. And I mean, I think it's one of the three worst Texans free agent decisions they've ever made. And this one has just been just so inexplicably awful. Like, I think they have to keep him around for next year as well, too. I think they'll have to pay dead money if they were to cut him. And then in year three, be able to release him without a hit. But I'll double check real fast to make sure. The next question here is from at Xenophon 212-730. Where does Mr. Trubisky rank in the pantheon bad quarterbacks that the Texans have lost to, above or below Dan Orlovsky and JT Lozman?
Oh, man, he's totally going over Orlovsky and Lozman. I mean, come on, it's Trubisky. Like, I still love him. He's still going to be my Madden boy. He's still going to be my boy on all my Madden teams. I can't hate him. I'll lose to Trubisky any day.
That's fair. I think he's for sure better than these two quarterbacks. I was looking at it using Pro Football Reference's Gameplay Finder. That used to be a lot better. It's not working as good as it used to work. But they lost to quarterbacks like Jamie Martin, Matt McGloin, Patrick Ramsey. Jamarcus Russell actually beat the Houston Texans once.
Oh, my God.
Blaine Gabbert beat them, but not with Jacksonville. He beat them as a tight end. And then Blake Bortles has beat them twice as well. So I think of all these quarterbacks, the one that I always think of is Matt McGloin, because he was a Bill O'Brien quarterback from Penn State, was an undrafted quarterback from there, signed with Oakland, was their third-string quarterback, beat Houston during their 14-game losing streak in 2013, and was like really bad the entire time, but was able to hit like two passes, and that was all they needed. And that game ended with Matt Schaub missing Andre Johnson in the end zone, and then them two fighting on the sideline. Like, I felt like I was watching, you know, my parents get divorced all over again whenever that spat was happening. Really broke my heart in 2013. So Matt McGloin will always be the worst. But yeah, I put Trubisky above Orlovsky and Lozman and these other guys I mentioned as well too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, just think, I'm predicting it now. I'll go on record. Mitch Trubisky is going to have a Ryan Tannehill-like resurgence. All he needs is to go on a good team.
All right.
And he'll be MVP contender.
And then pray for a few years. We need some water. Pray for a few years. And I don't know. I could see him backing up in like Kansas City or something. Who knows? So Eric Murray.
I could see that.
They released him next year. He would have a dead cap hit of $6.5 million, but they would save $250,000 if they cut him. In 2022, he would have a dead cap hit of $1.5 million. If they cut him, they would save $5.25 million. So they could come next year and save $250,000, or they can just like, yeah, we'll make him our fourth safety or our third safety. And then and keep him around for one more year. But yeah, so he's probably going to be here until I hope they cut him next offseason. He's bad, but I would guess he'd probably be here until at least 2022. The next question is from at Exile in Texas. Should the final home games be playing a stadium more aligned to the talent level of the coaches and roster, like opening up the Astrodome and playing over there?
Okay, I don't think we're that bad. Okay, I'm not gonna just clown the Texans that hard. We still have Deshaun Watson. I still believe in that goofy little quote I put at the end of one of my articles, is that like you always have a chance if you have Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. Even though this game hurt. This game really hurt. But you can't put Deshaun Watson in the Astrodome. He's too good for that. He deserves a fairly nice, you know, fairly new stadium with the roof open so he can look at the sun while his team is just exploding behind him. Just give him like a nice outing.
Yeah, you know? I like that. I love the roof open too. Like, I love the sunlight coming in, and I hate how it was always closed every you watch or whatever. It's like, yeah, they spent all this money for something they never put in use at all. So yeah, I think the open roof for Deshaun Watson is the best way for him to be playing football. And I have no ties to Astrodome at all. Maybe it'd be a good place like a monster truck rally. But even then, I think it's just full of rats, you know, and concrete. And they pulled all the seats out of there. I think it's just like completely empty inside there now too.
Oh my God, it probably looks like a Mad Max set in there.
Yeah. It's the Thunderdome now, pretty much. So I want to talk about.
Man, you almost want to go in there. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I want to talk about the Texans defense, and then I want to talk about their offensive line a little bit more too. So defensively, you know, Anthony Weaver has been like doing these like really kind of dumb things all throughout this year, and some of this is gonna be kind of regurgitating what we've already talked about. But so he had no option off for that quick slant in the slot to Allen Robinson. He played Eric Murray against Jimmy Graham on the goal line. Like, you get to pick your matchups and where you play what whenever you play man coverage. And that was the decision he went to this game, was that in the red zone, they would put Eric Murray over Jimmy Graham. They're still playing Jacob Marr in hook zones. They're still leaving Winnie Merciless on the edge, just wither away. And now we're 14 weeks in. Like, I understand the talent's really bad. I don't think anybody could be able to create a good defense out of what they've had here. But Anthony Weaver's just made so many decisions that have, like, actively hurt, you know, the already bad talent they have this season, too. And so, like, now that we're 14 weeks in, Joe, like, where do you stand on Weaver? And do you think he could survive a regime change? And, like, do you think this has just been a talent catastrophe that he has been trying to just, like, do anything he can with? Or do you think that there have been legitimate issues with him as a defensive coordinator this year?
I think there's been some legit issues with him. I think he burned the chance to send Jacob Martin to the Pro Bowl. the Eric Murray on Jimmy Graham thing, I think, was bad enough. And it's more than enough now to say goodbye to him. He's been like cursed by like Romeo Crennel. And I think he's unsalvageable for the regime change. I think he's shown more than enough. And I mean, like especially at this point where you know you're having a losing season, and you know the older players like Whitney Merciless aren't doing much. Like, Get the young guys in there. Come on, why not? Like show us something. Like they can't be worse than this. They can't be worse.
Yeah, it can be. And I mean, this defense is pretty similar to the one they had last year too. And this defense also had Watt healthy for the entirety of it. And like Crennel did a much better job than Weaver did. Like Crennel's like, I mean, I don't know where you rank him among defensive coordinators, but you know, he's a good one, and to like a really good one. And the same, pretty much the same defense with Watt instead without him has been, you know, like a bottom five defense again this year, and it's been much worse than what they had last year, where they were at least like, you know, competent against the run game. They had like some sort of competency as a pass rush with Watt healthy. But they did lose Gibson. They did lose Reader, which was two of their best players last year that they didn't have this year that they weren't able to really recover from. But I just think Weaver's just made so many poor decisions, has played guys in so many poor spots, and also just done things like detrimental for the future of the team. Like, I want to see Lonnie outside corner. I want to see Jacob Martin rush. Like, every single time it's a pass rushing situation, like, have him out there on the edge. Like, every time he drops into coverage, it's a waste of life. You know, I don't buy the Tyrell Adams things at all. Like, I don't like Carlos Watkins out there. Like, hit Blacklock more as a defensive end role because he's not going to play nose tackle for somebody else going forward. Play more 4-3 even, and try to get guys like one gapping and do more of like a role that they could play going forward next year as well too. And so I don't know. I just have seen too much of it. I hope he gets another shot somewhere again, because like he said all the right things this spring. You know, this summer he seems like a very intelligent guy. You know, it seemed like he had some good ideas, and like the talent level wasn't there for him to enact those ideas. But I think for too often though, like he puts tiger stripes on everything. Like he turned this defense into
Yeah.
at least a Frank, you know, a folder this year, whatever it didn't need to be. And Crennel, like as guilty as he was of playing like off man stuff, like they still have really great deep pass defense. They still were able to blitz well at times. He got the most he could out like a really horrendous secondary, and you know, Weaver hasn't been able to get like, you know, the most out of anybody at all this year whatsoever.
No, it's. I mean, I was calling for from the beginning of the season Jacob Martin to go to the Pro Bowl, and there was a few moments where it looked like it might happen, but it's over now.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I like the idea of Martin like being like a, I don't know, like a 7 sack a year guy, but like again, like he's a negative on so many plays. Like he's bad against the run. He's not a very good tackler. Like, and once also guys get their hands on him, he doesn't have an answer at all for it. Like, he has a chopped
No,
rep,
he
and he
sucks.
has a long
He
arm that's like,
sucks.
it's like once somebody gets their, like, once anybody gets their hands on him, he weighs 255 pounds. Like, he has no option at all. But, like, it all comes
Yeah.
together where he has these really great sacks, but I don't think he has the ability to generate consistent pressure at all. And, like, I would like to see
No.
him out there on the edge more than what we've seen. But, like, yeah, I'm not buying the Martin thing at all. And, like, if he's, I think, like, his, he could become like an Elvis Jumerville sort of player if he's able to gain weight and be able to have some sort of bull rush that sets up by his speed. Like, but we haven't seen that at all whatsoever. It's just like a chop rip and he plays really hard, or he runs all the way around a slow offensive tackle and is able to do something
Yeah.
with there as well too. So I don't know. Like, there's something, there's still like, there's stuff there with him, but this idea that he's gonna be some sort of cornerstone defensive player instead of just like, you know, your fourth or fifth best pass rusher, I think has been outlandish and absurd.
He's a contributor, and that's really the best you could say about him. He's like an Omenihu.
And well, and even Menehu, he's been kind of weird. I think a lot of his stuff's been kind of empty, and he's not very good against the run. They had to bench him because he was such a bad run defender. He's a good long arm. Like, I
Yeah.
think him for him, like, you just want to use him in pass rushing situations too, and be like, yeah, just long arm and bull rush, and try to get to the quarterback, and we're only going to play you on second and third down. That's it. And then kind of the same thing with Jacob Martin as well too. And then just kind of eat some like draws that you'll get beat on here and there, and who cares, you know, at that point.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's okay because like you're not paying them much, and they
For
help
sure.
with the pressure. So I mean, like it's nice to have players like that. But yeah, they're not that
Yeah, I mean,
good.
it's like you need some sort of like foundational level talent, and the Texans don't have that on their front seven at all. And the other thing that really kind of drove me crazy this game from a defensive perspective was just how bad the tackling was this week. I mean, they're playing flag football out there, and like it's, I don't know if Zach Cunningham is running tackling drills for this team, but this constant like wrapping up and pulling instead of like wrapping up and driving is insane. Or they're, again, like they're playing flag football. This week, Carlos Watkins, Justin Reed, Jacob Martin, even Jonathan Owens, Tyrell Adams, and Jonathan Greenard all were just really bad tackling with this constant like pulling and yanking instead of actually making, you know, real substantial tackles. And you know, it's kind of embarrassing. And I don't, and I like, even like going back to Tyrell Adams, like I don't see him as him being like a future star linebacker on a good defense at all. I think like he's played well for the role that he's been thrusted into, but he's nothing more than like a backup linebacker, and he's one of the worst tacklers I've ever seen. Like, everything's like constantly just pulling backwards, and he makes a ton of tackles 7 yards up the field, and it doesn't, there's no impact plays all there from him.
Yeah, I don't understand where this like narrative, I don't know where the narrative of Tyrell Adams being such a good linebacker came from, but yeah, he's not that good, and he's like a quintessential like 5-11 linebacker, mm-hmm. or a linebacker on a 5-11 team.
Yeah,
that's what he is.
Yeah, on a lost season sort of team like this was. So for the offensive line, you know, we mentioned about Max Sherman's bench for Brent Qualley. Howard can't run block at all. Fulton can't pass block at all. Tunsil was lazy this game, and like his feet were slow, and he gave up like 4 or 5 pressures. And when you're paid $14.4 million and they trade 2 first-round picks, a second-round pick for you, like any square pressure is unacceptable. Nick Martin's a replacement-level player too. He can't block the second level. He can't move the first level very well either. And they still can't pick up simple stunts as well too. So like with this Texans offensive line though, like, do you think that they are a good offensive line coach away from being like competent? Because this year they're among the bottom 5 in pass protection, like from pressure rate, and they're also last in run offense DVOA, at dead last at 32nd this year. So like, do you think this is just a coaching issue? Is there enough talent here to be able to salvage something out of this? What do you think about the prospects of the offensive line going forward in the future?
I think they have decent prospects. Because I mean, you have the 2 tackles down, you have them down for the future. And like we were talking about with Sharping, even though he has looked terrible this year, like part of me hopes that if a good offensive line coach comes in, he can rebuild him back into his rookie form, and he won't, I don't know if he'll ever be great, but he could be at least a contributor on that offensive line. But the center and the other guard, I think, need to be completely replaced. And I don't think any amount of coaching could turn them into anything exceptional. So a good coach could help one of the guard spots and mm-hmm. make and bring it from like a bottom of the league offensive line to like a middling offensive line. But if you want it to be something actually good, you'd have to replace the center and the other guard.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like this is offensive line too, that's 3 first-round picks. 3 second-round picks, around $31 million in cap space devoted to it. And they've invested a ton to try to make this offensive line good after the problems they had in 2017, 2018 as well, too. And, like, the results haven't been there as well, like, at all there either. And, like, it's kind of funny. You mentioned Fulton, you know, right guard. Like, he's not going to be here next year, but they signed him from Kansas City. And Kansas City, their guards right now, they have that Italian meatball who's like their 3rd-string offensive guard, starting at left guard for them. I can't remember his name. They like rotated their right guard a few times. They've had Mike Remmers play a lot of right tackle this year because Schwartz has been hurt. And like, it still has been competent. Like, they're still an okay at pass protection.
Yeah, they're okay.
And like, whenever you have a quarterback like Mahomes and you have an offense to get the ball out quickly that's really great against screens and make defense uncomfortable, like, there's so much involving coaching that you can get out of from the offensive line. That you don't have to like be like the Browns and be like the Titans, who you invest so much of your resources to it. But like, there's 2 different ways to go about it. And like, the Texans have the same level of investment in their offensive line that Cleveland and Tennessee have without the results at all whatsoever. And I think one of the things that will really help them next year, regardless of who the offensive line coach is just like picking a run scheme and just trying to get good at one run play, because they run like every run play imaginable, and it's always pretty bad too. And it's like, or like 4 guys will make their blocks, but 1 guy doesn't, and it ruins the whole play. Or everybody makes their blocks, and David Johnson can't make like the 3rd cornerback miss, you know, and so they get 4 yards mm-hmm. instead of 15 yards, and the whole thing's been a mess. So I don't know. I hold out hope. There's enough talent here, but it's just like, I can't even watch the offensive line video at all. It just makes me just so mad and just so upset.
Yeah.
And like, I just don't, and it just turns me into a baby just posting there and be like, look how bad it is. I hate this so much. They're so bad, you know? And there really isn't anything I can happy at all involving there this year.
It's another reason to hire whatever his name is from Kansas City, the offensive coordinator.
Bieniemy.
Yeah, it's another reason to hire them. And maybe, you know, like you said, like, they've done a good job in Kansas City at getting some production out of that like merry-go-round of a interior offensive line. And maybe we're just one free agent signing and one like 3rd-round guard mm-hmm. or center away from, yeah, we'll keep Nick Martin in Sharping the next year, and we'll cycle the center with this rookie we have, and we'll cycle the other guard with this draftee that we got in the third round.
Yeah.
And it won't be good, but like you said, it'll be good enough to run one running play well, and that's all we need.
Yeah, I know. And like it's in the run game too. Like Howard's been all like he's abysmal as a run blocker, and that's a big problem there too. It's not even just interior from a run blocking. When like Intensel doesn't make it, hasn't made his teammates better well enough this year, for what they invest into him at that position too. And like he isn't, and like even as like a run blocker, he's not the type of guy that, I don't know, that like Ronnie Stanley is, for example, or whatever too. So it's hard. It's hard. It's a rough way all the way around along the offensive line. And like I think Bieniemy's a good example of that. Brian Daboll's a good example too in Buffalo. They have like their tackle set up with Darrell Williams and Dawkins, but their interior, they've had a ton of injuries there. They're constantly rotating guys. Like Mitch Morse has been hurt, Cody Ford's been hurt. They've started Brian Winters. They started a guy I've never seen at all before, or heard of before at all last week. They have Lee
And it's
Smith,
still great.
and it's still like they have a great offense. Like Lee Smith is like
Yeah.
a 285-pound third tight end. He's been very good helping out with their pass protection too. Like they've done a lot of things to make up for it. And that's kind of my biggest concern about Arthur Smith being a head coach in Houston. Like he's so outside zone heavy. And like I think Houston, they cut Fulton, and if they could teach Howard how to block it, but I don't think Howard has a good body for the outside zone. If that's my concern about Smith, like being a head coach in Houston, is so much of his scheme is based around that one play, and I just don't see it like offensive line wise on the right hand side of it, to be a really good outside zone team like how Tennessee is right now. But you know they put David Questenberry out there and they were able to block it. They turned Brian Kelly into one of the best outside zone blocking tackles in football this year too. So who knows? Arthur Smith may be able to work some magic there if they went that route too. So anyways, the last thing I have here is what do you have left to live for these last 3 weeks of the Houston Texans season?
I hope that I hope to see more rookies. I will be as happy as a clam when I'm done with my finals, and I don't care how bad the Texans will be playing. I will be completely content watching the garbage on the television once I'm done with work. And Deshaun Watson's always fun. Deshaun Watson is always top quality entertainment. So, and hey, even though I wrote that hit piece on Cutie in August or whatever, I still like him, and I would absolutely love to see Cutie become a starting caliber like slot receiver, even though I don't think it's ever going to happen. So I'm here for the Watson to Cutie
Yeah.
connection, and just hoping that seeing more Greenard or Greenard, Coulter and Waring, those would just be icing on the cake. And that'll be good enough for me. And then it'll all be about just watching the playoffs happen and figuring out who we can draft.
Yeah, football doesn't stop until after the draft in April, and then it stops for 4 months, and then it starts back up again. Yeah, I mean, for me, like the only thing I care about win loss wise is I really hope they beat the Colts because I hate the Colts. And I like a lot of players. Like I love Kenny Moore; he's my favorite slot corner. Like I like Buckner a lot. Like I really like Darius Leonard. You know, they have a lot of players that I like, but I just hate the franchise and everything about them. And if they're able to beat Indy and then be able to open up the door for a Titans AFC South championship, I would be very happy about that. But like as far as players go, the only thing I care about is Kalei Warring at all whatsoever. I think there's a war on masculinity in this country. They don't want to allow, you know, guys be guys at all anymore, and Kahale represents that. And right now, Romeo Crennel the Texans are at a forefront of this war on masculinity by not getting Kahale Warring targets. And you know, I want to see Romeo with some neon glasses on, a spring break, you know, 2014 neon tank top on. I want to see him doing curls on the sideline. I want to see Kahale Warring, you know, play 30 snaps and just like throw him the ball, like throw him something on the flat. Like you can manufacture and call plays ahead of time, and like have your play script set up. It's like, all right, we're gonna run this play on 1st and 10, then 2nd and 4, we're gonna run a bootleg right, and Kahale, you're gonna chip down here, and you're gonna be open here, and then you'll have 7 yards after the catch or whatever. They can do that. Just do that. Just get one reception, because I have this champagne that's about to expire in my fridge that I bought after they drafted him waiting for his first catch, and it hasn't happened yet, but I think it's gonna happen sometime these last 3 weeks, and right now that's the only thing I care about at all.
So you're telling me you don't believe in the masculinity of the Chad Henson?
It's all underscore. I'm like, I don't know. Like Chad Henson is more he's more chatty than I wanted him to be after doing some research into Chad. But still, it doesn't take away the narrative that I've already created and have cemented in my heart for these next three seasons. In these next 3 weeks, I mean.
The goofy thing about Kahale Waring is that every time I think of him, the only thing I can think of him as doing is catching a 3-yard pass in the Battle Red uniforms and then it going to commercial break while Even Flow is playing. And like that's just like if that's very chatty, and that's why I think, you know, I think you gotta take what you have in Chad Henson.
I think it would need to be LMAO and they would play you'll play Party Rock in a commercial after he catches up the seam and then spikes it through the goalpost. Like that's what I'm envisioning right now. And we haven't seen
Oh my God, that's gonna make me throw up.
That's what this country is taking away from us, you know, back in the halcyon days of 2012, you know. But I do think with like Kahale, like the Texans haven't had a good tight end since Owen Daniels. And like Kahale's the only athletic profile that's there and has been there, and like he didn't know the playbook, and then he had that weird mysterious injury, which I chalked up to him being too hot for Bill O'Brien and flustering too much, and he couldn't have him in his view at all because he just confused and made him feel too weird. And so it's like, but he has the profile like a good tight end. He has the body. He was a good blocker at San Diego State. He was really good at stretching the seam. They just haven't had somebody who can hit the seam at all, aside from Jordan Akins here and there. But like Akins is like 29 years old already and can't block. And like there's not the same level of potential upside, possibly with a water polo player who didn't know what an A-gap was for like the first like 4 years he was playing football. So I don't know. I hope there's something there. There probably is anything there, but that's what I'm holding out hope for the rest of the season.
Which I don't know what the heck is going on with Jordan Akins. Like I was kind of excited last year because he seemed to like establish like a connection mm-hmm. with Watson during the scramble drill. Like I don't think Akins is really good at anything besides getting open on those like scramble plays. That's really important. Good too.
And he can duck under the tackles. And I think he's pretty in the seam. But like lately though, the problem with Akins is that he's playing outside wide receiver and he's playing slot receiver and he doesn't have the quickness to play those positions. Like he's good as a receiver from the tight end position, and then you put him outside wide against a cornerback and you have him run like, you know, like a vertical route and they're not throwing those at all. And, you know, I don't know. He doesn't have the speed to run those deep crossing stuff at all either. So I think that's kind of like where they're at with Akins right now. Like he just isn't, they're playing all these five wide sets and he can't be used on that way. And then he's not going to block or like warrant playing him. But again, like Fellows isn't a blocker either. So I don't know. It's just a mess, that position. And it's been like that since, you know, 2013.
It's just the Houston Texans way. Yeah. It's just how it is. Maybe we can figure out how to trade for George Kittle.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's like, gosh, he's such a great blocker. It's incredible how good a blocker he is. I miss watching him play this year. But anyways, I guess that's our show for tonight. Good luck on your finals, Joe. We'll all be praying for you. I'll be sending some stuff up to the main upstairs as well as I can, so you can get your last project done, taken care of. And then you can watch the Texans play the Bengals and watch them play the Colts. Woo! And that'll be fun to end out like the rest of this.
We're gonna beat the Colts. Last win of the season. We're gonna beat the Colts. And then the Titans are gonna win the AFC South by like clawing to their 10-6 finish. I was still convinced they were gonna go 9-7 because it seems like they just dropped some games that they shouldn't. So I was just convinced that they were just gonna crawl to the finish line. But no, they're gonna win 10 games least.
I hope so.
And that's how it's going to be.
I really hope so. I hope that's exactly what happens, but we'll still be here. We'll still be, even if the game isn't fun, we'll have fun. And hopefully this podcast is still enriching your life as a Texans fan. But until next time, we should have a preview show this week. Maybe, hopefully, but that will probably be out, you know, Friday morning or Thursday morning. But if not, we'll talk to you next week whenever the Texans play the Colts after week 15, I guess. But until next time, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Power Radio. And thank you for being on and talking to me this evening, Joe.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
That sounded good to me. I thought it was pretty good.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.